From KUAR News in Little Rock, this is a look at Arkansas news, politics, and more. Coming up,
traditional public school supporters air their grievances over the handling of the Little Rock School District by the state.
Pulaski Tech votes to become part of the University of Arkansas system. Now it's up to the UA board.
Ahead of next week's special session on highways, lawmakers are still working to form a consensus on funding.
And we'll talk about Arkansas's reaction to President Obama's directive about transgender bathroom access.
For the week ending Friday, May 13th, 2016, this is KUAR's Week in Review podcast. I'm Michael Heplin.
I'm Jacob Kaufman.
I'm Chris Hickey.
That's just ahead. Jacob, a lot of people came out on Thursday to express frustration about the situation right now with the Little Rock School District and the oversight by the state, calling for independence and for the Little Rock School District to finally be able to be operated on its own again. Tell me first, describe the meeting. It sounded rather emotional.
Yeah, there are a lot of people there. The maximum occupancy of the auditorium at the Department of Education building is 75. And so they said there are too many people in the room, and so they had a lot of people sitting in the lobby watching everything going on the television screen. So it's kind of interesting. Every time someone would make a point that someone applauded for, you'd hear, like, the applause coming from the lobby about a half second later on the television delay. But people in Little Rock, in a wide array of civic groups from all sorts of different neighborhoods in the city, have been upset over the last 18 months since the state took over the district, because six of the schools were in academic distress of the 48 schools in the school district. But more recently, since mid-April, since the firing of Baker Kouris, people have become reanimated, and you've seen people speak out a lot more vigorously. And this was the first meeting since he was fired that he got a chance to speak to the state board. He's giving a monthly progress report. So during that progress report, there's also an opportunity for public comment. So that's why everyone was there today, or on Thursday. There are basically three main arguments kind of made by everybody. The first one involved the phrase parallel school systems, and it's something a lot of people said, including Baker Kouris and State Senator Joyce Elliott of Little Rock. And basically the idea is, since the State Board of Education has approved all these charter school expansions in Little Rock, effectively what they've done is create not just schools of innovation, which was the original idea of charter schools, but they've made two different school systems in the Little Rock School District. And one, as a result of this, has become they're segregated student bodies, because basically charter schools have a higher percentage of white people and affluent people than the Little Rock School District does. So Senator Elliott basically said the state board has to take notice of the effect of what's going on.
I am slow to call things racist, but I can see. I can figure things out. And some of this is unintentional. But the result is the same. Thank you.
So Senator Elliott spoke at some length and had a number of different points to make. But here's Superintendent Baker Kouris also talking about this idea of a parallel school system. Shortly before he was told his contract would not be renewed, he spoke out against the expansion of some schools in Little Rock School District. He was wearing a sticker that was made by the Arkansas Public Policy Panel that a lot of other people wore that said, keep the public in public schools. So Baker Kouris is certainly not being shy about his thoughts anymore about those sorts of issues. But he made this analogy about parallel school systems that appealed to the more fiscally minded people on the state board.
In a public environment, you'd never build two water systems and then see which one worked and which one went broke and then, I guess, abandon the pipe in the ground. That's essentially what we're doing. It makes no sense to me. But
Kouris also said that the Little Rock School District, when you look at their record with low-income students compared to charter schools, which take less of them than the Little Rock School District, that, well, even then, the Little Rock School District is actually outperforming charter schools, so they don't see why the state is giving expansions and granting new charter schools when they're actually underperforming traditional public schools.
Thousands of students in Little Rock go to the best 5% of schools in the state. And you say, well, that's true, Bake, but what about the rest of the kids? Well, they're outperforming their peers. If you look at poverty indexes and see how our kids perform and look at our competitors, and the best competitors to look at are the ones in this town. Look at Covenant Keepers. Look at Little Rock Prep, and look at how we do. We are doing better. That's undeniable.
So Baker Kouros, his nickname for himself is Bake. We learned that from that cut, too.
Yeah.
But this came in the same week. I don't know, Chris, if you followed this at all, about Lisa Academy. They apologized for not sending recruitment mailers to certain zip codes.
Yeah, they said they're under instructions from the State Department of Education to target those particular zip codes as well. I think they sent out a statement after Arkansas Times and some others reported on this that mainly zip codes below or south of Interstate 630 and also west and east did not get these mailers, these kind of advertisements for lottery that Lisa Academy is having this summer, and also their application date. So they sent out a press release and a statement saying, well, we had intentionally did this because, well, first of all, we're directed by the state board, but also we figured that radio, TV, and internet ads would target these other neighborhoods.
Right.
And argued that they are expanding the number of minority students they have.
Yeah, that's true. But I still think Lisa Academy's rate or something, that I think they had around 39% minority students, and then Little Rock School District had 70 or 65% or something like that. But so anyway, that was the big first point from people at the meeting at the State Board of Education about this parallel school system idea, which state control of Little Rock School District or not, it doesn't matter. The state board approves charter school expansions, whether they control the school district itself anyway. But the second big point was that they have no trust with the education department and education commissioner Johnny Key. For a variety of reasons, most on people's mind, though, was the sudden replacement of Baker Kouros with Michael Poor of Bentonville Public Schools without consulting anyone in the district about it. But the state board this week, they voted. They made a motion to create a civic advisory board that Johnny Key praised, and he called it a significant step toward the return of local control. It's something that the state has to do with any district under control in year two. But the civic advisory board creation comes at the same time the civic advisory committee, a committee and not a board, ends. The chair of that, Greg Adams, he came to deliver a message to Johnny Key as he never went to a civic advisory committee. And he said that they voted without dissension to ask Johnny Key to resign. So that is the community input, clearly, from Little Rock to Johnny Key. I don't know that a board would change that.
Yeah, what's the difference here, really, between a committee and a board?
There's a lot less people on the board. I think the Civic Advisory Committee has maybe a couple dozen people. This board has eight people. Johnny Key will appoint all of these people on the board. He says that it has a little bit more functions like a traditional school board, although critics of the school of the board instead of the committee, they say that there's one in Pulaski County Special School District, and it's basically doesn't have any power at all. Some people that are on that board have protested by wearing tape on their mouths to the meetings, so it doesn't give a lot of people in Little Rock faith that Johnny Key would listen. So that's the second goal, or second main point, is they have no trust with the existing education department. Their third main thing is the ultimate return of local control. Johnny Key said two different things about that. The first thing he said was that, well, we know how to return local control. All the six schools in academic distress have to be lifted out of failure for reading and math levels. But the other thing he said, and it's kind of ill-defined, was that if just one or two schools change on the next test results that come in at the end of July, then maybe the state board could reconsider the whole thing, or maybe just have control over the failing schools but not the entire district. So that would be a huge change, but that was just a blip in the conversation, sort of.
And calls for Johnny Key to resign. I assume he doesn't plan on going anywhere by his own will.
You know, I didn't get a chance to ask him that, and a TV reporter I read asked him, and he said no comment on it. But the Civic Advisory Committee voted out any opposition to say that he should resign and be replaced. But he's definitely not going to do that. So.
And on the subject of public schools, on Friday, President Obama issued a directive that public schools nationwide must permit transgender students to use bathrooms and locker rooms consistent with their chosen identity. This obviously comes as nationally there's the argument about bathrooms in North Carolina, saying that people have to use the bathrooms that go along with their what's on their birth certificates. But, Jacob, we had a quick reaction from state officials, Governor Hutchinson in particular, recommending public schools disregard the directive.
And it's not that surprising. It's not the same thing as same-sex marriage being legalized and it coming from the Supreme Court of the United States. It's just some guidance coming from the executive branch and from the Obama administration. And, of course, Asa Hutchinson disagrees with this, and Leslie Rutledge would. It makes sense. It would be bizarre if they didn't. On the other hand, UALR, Joel Anderson, one of his last decrees perhaps before he'll be replaced or having
– this chancellor.
Yeah, we're trying to get a new chancellor right now. He said that the university will follow this directive from the federal government. I also talked to Michael Poore. It was the first time I talked to him. I caught him for a second in between taping Arkansas Week in the Department of Education building and when he was going in and out of the auditorium. And I didn't see the directive yet. I just heard about it on the radio, and the governor didn't have a statement out yet. And I said, so what do you think about the transgender bathroom thing? Can they use the bathrooms? And he just said, like, well, I haven't read the president's order yet. I haven't talked to the governor yet. So I said, well, say you formed your opinion in advance of what you think was right and wrong on this issue. You know, what do you, generally do you think? And he said, well, we have transgender students in Bentonville schools, and we don't have a policy about it, but he kind of danced around it, but he said, like, we've worked individually with students and families really well, and we don't have any problems. So I don't know what that means, really, but I guess the Arkansas Department of Education sent out a statement after the governor saying they'll follow the governor. So we'll see if Michael Poore will choose day one or before day one to start disagreeing with the education commissioner that just appointed him.
Well, Chris, this week the Board of Trustees for Pulaski Tech voted to merge with the University of Arkansas system. Still has to be approved by the UA board, but unanimously backing this. You covered that meeting. Sounds like there wasn't a lot of debate about this, that pretty well people seem to think this is a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, it was a unanimous decision. There were 7 members on the board, and they all seemed to think it was a good idea. I mean, there was a fair amount of discussion beforehand, mostly having to do with, you know, kind of the specifics about what it will mean for the college and what, you know, it means for the faculty and staff. And there's some talk about benefits and curriculum and so forth. But it was a well-attended meeting, open meeting at the college. Probably 50 or 100 people in attendance, faculty, staff, students, community members. But this kind of discussion about possibly joining the UA system has been going on. I spoke with Margaret Ellaby, the president, last week and also after the meeting this week. And she said that it had been going on for about a year. Late March, UA system president Donald Bobbitt had kind of presented plans to the Pulaski Tech board for the possible merger. And based on what I heard at the meeting, and it was confirmed later just talking to folks, that it was kind of an idea that the UA system had presented to Pulaski Tech. They had, in recent years, seen declining enrollment. Just note here, in 2011, for instance, they had just shy of 12,000 students, but last fall they had 7,600 students, so that's quite a significant drop. I think in 2014 they unsuccessfully tried to raise the millage rate in Pulaski County, but voters rejected that. That millage would have gone to fund the school, and so they had to raise costs, and that also probably contributed to their declining enrollment. Anyways, after the vote, and by the way, once they voted, you know, everyone in the audience clapped. So, I mean, if that gives you any indication that they, the college supports this, that should be it. But I spoke to Margaret Ellaby again at the meeting. She's the president of Pulaski Tech, and we kind of talked about or asked her, you know, just what, you know, in the negotiations that are probably to come if the UA system board approves this, what will it be about? And she said it's mostly about benefits. And from what I gather, their human resources people tend to see the potential benefits, health, retirement benefits for faculty and staff at Pulaski Tech getting better because they'll be joining the wider UA system. But here she is talking about that.
If we sit down with their staff and our staff and we see that health benefits, for example, there is a period of time that we can immediately, for example, begin to transition, and that is to the benefit of our employees, and it's going to work for the UA system, then, again, that would be great to be able to pursue that right away. If we have to wait a period of time because of other details, then that's what we have to do. But at this point, we've got to develop is what I call the wish list and see what we can start to implement in a very reasonable and sound manner that works for both Pulaski Tech and the UA system.
So you kind of get a sense there that they really want to go along with this merger rather quickly and so that, you know, their faculty and staff can take advantage of, you know, these benefits. There's also this added maybe quality for the merger deal for Pulaski Tech in that the UA system kind of negotiates with companies like IT companies and like student information system companies. Or there, for instance, there's this company called Blackboard, which provides like it's like a course management tool for faculty and students. And the UA system has a contract with Blackboard, and they have their contract applies to all the campuses in their system, and they're able to negotiate for a lower price than if an individual college did the same thing, which is what Pulaski Tech. So Pulaski Tech feels that, and UA system has indicated that they'll probably have a reduced cost of, you know, in their Blackboard contract. But altogether, Ellaby says that, you know, Pulaski Tech will stay a technical college. It's not going to – this potential merger, it looks like a probable merger, will not really affect its offerings.
With this opportunity to join UA System, we are able to keep our identity. Our identity is very valued and respected in our community. It is valued and embraced here at Pulaski Tech, and our students want that. And I think that's what is the basis to our mission here, and that's not going to change.
And this is a sentiment echoed by the board chairman, Ronald Deadman.
We won't lose focus of what our mission here is at Pulaski Technical College. We will remain a technical college, and we will offer the things and do the things that technical colleges do.
Now, Pulaski Tech primarily offers two-year degrees, but a lot of students use their experience there as a foothold to get into a four-year degree program at other universities. And Ellaby says that this will kind of expand the number of programs and opportunities for those two-year students who want to transfer into four-year institutions, which are, you know, a major part of the UA system.
In the case with Pulaski Tech, it was one of the few remaining independent technical or two-year colleges in the state of Arkansas. I can't remember all the figures. I don't have them in front of me, but I remember reading them on the news this week during All Things Considered that there are, I think, a couple dozen or so in the UA system, fewer than that in the ASU system, and then Southern Arkansas University at Magnolia also has one or two in their own system.
Yeah, and the UA board that's going to meet later this month, and they'll be voting on this merger too. They're going to be meeting at one of the community colleges in the UA.
In DeQueen.
DeQueen, yeah. It's a Cossetot Community College. Yeah.
But expected to pass it. I mean, it was Bob at the UA system head who proposed.
Yeah, he proposed it before them. And I imagine he has a great deal of influence with the UA Board of Trustees. really, there weren't any – I couldn't find any compelling reasons that this compelling arguments against it. Although there was actually a former board member of the Pulaski Tech had written to the Arkansas Times, and they published this kind of a bit critical of the merger plans, in that he had seen, I forget his name, but Pulaski Tech used to be kind of an open enrollment school. But I guess in the past years, the legislature has, you know, decreed that the school have some kind of specifications for applicants. And he said, this former board member said that, well, this, has led also to the declining enrollment. And he fears that if the Pulaski Tech joins the UA system, that there might be more stipulations to for applicants, or, you know, more barriers, in other words, as part of the deal. So
yeah, and
that,
you
could
know,
potentially be a thing.
It's been well known too that, you know, for a lot of students, they will take a lot of the basic classes at Pulaski Tech, then come over to UALR just because the classes were cheaper over at Pulaski Tech.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's no telling. I mean, it seems like the overall cost of the taking classes and stuff will probably not increase. But, you know, that it's hard to say, really. I mean, it'll be interesting, I guess, to see what is negotiated between these two institutions in terms of what it means for students, faculty, and the wider system as a whole.
Well, Chris, you were saying earlier, though, that some people on Pulaski Technical's board that voted for it saw it as an opportunity to make the transition from two-year colleges to four-year colleges more seamless, because you'd already be in the UA system when you started, so you would know your credits would just get transfer. You wouldn't have to worry that they won it or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, again, all these details are yet to be kind of worked out. But, I mean, Pulaski Tech, I talked to Ellaby about this, and she said that, you know, well, we already have a wide array of agreements with UALR, you know, about transfer. And she said they have a pretty strong agreement with the business department, at UALR. And just looking to expand that, and I think it would be an overall – I mean, it would seem like it would be an overall good thing for students at both institutions, probably, because if UALR – and by the way, you know, we're editorially independent, but we're a service of University of Arkansas, right. Little Rock.
Licensed, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it would seem to me that UALR, you know, would benefit in a sense, because they would get a larger stream of students coming to them from the two-year institution. But at the same time, like what you're saying, you know, maybe more people will choose to try to start out at the two-year, and then, you know, I don't know.
Right. Well, this week, none of us have made it over to the Capitol. Nothing specific has been going on. Lawmakers have been meeting mostly just together to get together plans in advance of next week's special session, expected to begin on Thursday, to address a shortfall in funding for the highway system in the state, make sure that the state is able to receive matching federal dollars for road work that's sorely needed. Jacob, at this point, there's been some debate about whether or not Arkansas needs to take steps to correct the funding problem in the long term. At this point, it's just been the governor saying, let's use some general revenue and some rainy day funds to come together. Some other lawmakers, though, have suggested that we really ought to consider maybe an increase in the fuel taxes in the state, and that's gotten some resistance.
I think going into the special session, which will be the third time lawmakers convene in the span of a year, I think there's no real hope that they'll get any kind of long-term plan in there. And the governor has said his plan is a short-term plan. He's not pretending it's a long-term plan or anything like that. Federally, there's a five-year highway bill. As you mentioned, the reason why he's doing this is that later this year, I believe, we have to match about $50 million in order to get $200 million worth of federal funds. And so the governor's plan, his big deal, is it'd be for the first time ever they would take from general revenue to pay for highway funds, which traditionally relies on things like fuel taxes, user fees. He'd also shift sales and use taxes for vehicles and surplus money to do that from general revenue. So that's his plan. His big sale is that he calls it revenue neutral, which means there aren't any new taxes. And so while he is moving money from one pot to somewhere else, there's nothing, no new taxes and no new cuts directly, so to speak. The big difference between that and other lawmakers, and this is coming from Republican lawmakers, which means something, is that they're suggesting there be a small diesel tax increase, anywhere from 5 to 8 cents. And so that'd be the first tax increase proposal, and that's coming from Republican lawmakers. But they try to sweeten the deal, even though they are raising the tax, they still want it to be revenue neutral. And so the way they do it to sort of offset that increase is they'd have a $25 million income tax cut. And so then there's the debate over who gets the income tax cut. We saw in the last regular legislative session, the bottom 40% of Arkansans were left out of tax cuts.
But that would still impact people traveling through Arkansas who might not get the income tax cuts but might have to pay more at the pump.
Which is something those senators and lawmakers like, actually. They want truckers to pay for it. They want tourists to pay for it. They'd rather have those automobile users pay for it than Arkansans through the general revenue fund.
And what, it's been a couple of decades since the fuel taxes were last raised in the state?
I think that's right, and that's important to realize. The reason why we're talking about this in part is, one, because of the age of the infrastructure, but also because cars are more efficient now, and because of that, the impact of the fuel tax, we get less collections from it.
Right. Cars go a lot further, and you don't get as much for the wear and tear on the roads. Well, that is at this point set to begin on Thursday. The governor hasn't formally issued the call, but said he would be once they kind of finalize the plan and what actually will be included during the special session.
And some people in his staff, I think, have even kind of said that they want to shape the call for the special session in such a way that people would only be able to offer up alternative short-term plans. And if they wanted to offer a long-term plan at all, then it would take a two-thirds vote to even entertain the idea.
Well, we'll have more on the session during our podcast next week, assuming everything goes as planned. I had heard some talk, Jacob, there was even talk maybe the session might not happen. Have you heard anything to that effect? Does it seem pretty definite from what you've heard?
I think most of the lawmakers, like House Speaker Jeremy Gillum and Senate President Jonathan Dismang, are pretty ready for it. They don't say there's absolute consensus on a plan, but I think they're pretty certain that the governor's plan or something like it will come out of it, and that they'll be able to convince lawmakers for those diesel tax ideas that's more of a long-term deal. Let's just get the federal match and figure it out in the regular session when we're meant to have these longer discussions.
Well, more on this next week. Thanks for listening to KUAR's Weekend Review Podcast. I'm Michael Hiplin.
I'm Jacob Kaufman.
I'm Chris Hickey.
Our theme song is by our own Chris Hickey. If you're not already a subscriber, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, and we'll see you next time. KUAR is a listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas at Little Rock.